Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in this Herd's Raw Herd. Wherever you may be in. However you may be making this part of your day, thank you so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, in for Colin Cowherd. The Herd is brought to you by Jersey Mike's. Be a sub above. By the way, I am told, men, subs and root, meaning food on its way. You have never seen grown men devour sandwiches like on a Jersey Mike's Wednesday. Whoa. Okay, let's get into it. Colin's not feeling well. I mean, I think, you know, like if you follow him on social media, you know what's up. If not, you can do your own research. He'll be fine. He went on a walk yesterday. He's all good. And we're excited for whenever he comes back and always thankful to have him leading kind of this ship. That's what I kind of feel like, you know. Like, we got Dan Patrick on the East Coast. We got Colin on the West Coast. And they are stewards of the rest of us here at Fox Sports Radio. I do want to ask, like, Colin is a huge Russell Wilson fan. Huge Russell Wilson fan. But I got to ask, what is Russell Wilson trying to accomplish? Now, it's not that... he's not well respected in the NFL. He is. And he just won the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, was sitting with Commissioner Goodell at the Super Bowl. But yesterday he was on with Dan Patrick. And now this is less than 24 hours removed from there being a report that people had called the Seahawks to inquire as to whether or not Russell Wilson was available via trade. Dan Patrick asked Russell Wilson if he wanted more input around the team. Take a listen.
I think that ultimately, for me personally, I think that I want to be able to be involved, because at the end of the day, it's your legacy. It's your team's legacy. It's, you know, it's the guys you get to go into the huddle with. And at the end of the day, those guys you got to trust.
Are you involved in personnel decisions? Have you been involved in personnel decisions?
Not as much. I don't, you know, I think that,
do you want to be involved, Russ?
Yeah, I think it helps. I think it helps to be involved more. But I think that dialogue should happen more often, in my opinion.
I asked Brock Huard. He joined us earlier, NFL on Fox analyst, former quarterback with the Seahawks, of course, grew up in the area. He covered them locally for local radio, does a podcast still. I asked him why Russell Wilson is saying this now.
Well, I think it's possible that he views himself, and he probably can make a pretty strong case that he's got more equity than Deshaun Watson. I do think it is just flexing his power muscle. A year ago at the Pro Bowl, he said, I need more superstars. This is him, I think, flexing his muscle, saying at this stage, I need more help up front.
Okay. I don't think anyone's disputing that he needs more help up front. I don't understand the I know more than you, right? Especially when, by all accounts, they engage with Russell Wilson in regards to the offensive coordinator position, interviewed 14 people. We're in this place where, I think it's all of us. We all want to be heard, right? You know, it's the demonstrations over the summer. They're about being heard. They are. People want their feelings to be heard, to be known. I mean, that's really what social media, I mean, you go back to message boards or the impetus of sports radio. Like, Colin doesn't take calls. I rarely take calls. But the start of sports radio was, you know, Mike and the Dog in New York, and let's go to Jimmy on Staten Island. Jimmy, you're on with Mike and the Dog, right? Like, it was, and the idea is people want to be heard. And it went from sports radio to message boards to social media. You know, they all want to be heard. Athletes are no different. Russell wants to be heard. Now, the problem with it is, you know, he also kind of compared himself to LeBron, compared himself to Tom Brady. I think Russell Wilson's a terrific quarterback. I'm a Russell Wilson fan, not a Russell Wilson hater. Right? But they've turned more of the offense over to him, and it's not like they're doing better because of it. Is it all his fault? No. But again, this is all part of the deal in the NFL. If the quarterback's going to take a gigantic amount of money, something else is going to suffer. Right? Then they go out and trade to get a left tackle from the Houston Texans. That's a great, like, we're doing the best we can to protect you. There is not a magic overnight elixir fix. And another big reason, and this is kind of similar to Tom Brady and kind of similar to somebody, when you're never picking in the top five or top 10, it's not just the first round. People make this mistake all the time. It's not just that you're not getting one of the top five or 10 prospects. You're getting, you know, between 20 and 30. But then you go to the second round, the third round, it's the same thing. There's a major difference between picking at 40 and picking at 60, right? So, you know, is there frustration? Yeah. But all of this should not be aired publicly. It just shouldn't. It just don't. Because there was never any from, like, Russell Wilson saying he's tired. Because part of it was what he said on Dan Patrick. Part of it, afterwards, he talked to reporters and he said, I'm tired of getting hit. Well, hey, dude, nobody holds on to the football longer than you do. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger's gotten hit a bunch. Why? He holds on to the football. Deshaun Watson, they had to rebuild their offensive line. Why? He holds on to the football. If you're going to try and play hero ball and hold on to the ball, guess what's going to happen? You're going to get hit. Right? I mean, we not learn from Tom Brady? What does Tom Brady do better than anybody else? Gets rid of the football. Get it out of your hands. Get to somebody else. Be precise. Find the underneath stuff. I mean, in the last 10 years, when you turn on the Seattle Seahawks, usually an afternoon, sometimes an evening game, what do you almost always see in the fourth quarter? Close game, Russell Wilson running around in the offensive backfield trying to make a play. And I'm not going to dispute the fact that their line hasn't been rebuilt well enough, that it hasn't been good enough. He's right. He's not wrong. But the idea that a player wants to have say in personnel decisions, like, yeah, that's not actually how it works. It's not even close to how it works. We'll let you know. If we want your input on a certain guy, we'll let you know. If you want to give us input, feel free to knock yourself out. But the idea that we're running by you different scenarios and situations, like, nah. That's not how we built the Seahawks to a two-time Super Bowl team and a one-time Super Bowl champion. No, and it's not how we're going to rebuild the Seahawks. This feels very contrived, and the balance of it opposite the fact that he's Walter Payton Man of the Year. And I'm not an idiot. I know that Walter Payton Man of the Year is an incredibly important award, but also symbolic. And it's symbolic due to what you do off the football field with your charities, and you can be the most charitable, the most thoughtful guy off the football field and still be a selfish, you know what, on the football field. That's where we, but it's really hard for the mind to process that. Because when the mind sees you as the Walter Payton Man of the Year, you look gracious, you look humble, you look understanding that there's more than just yourself out there. And then when you talk about what you need, how you want to be involved, like, you know more about somebody else's job than they do, it has the opposite appearance to me. I mean, Russell Wilson's not getting traded. He may want a new contract. I'm sure he wants better weaponry around him. And remember, he worked out with Antonio Brown when Antonio Brown was suspended. And he's watching the Super Bowl going, like, I could have had Antonio Brown. They wouldn't let me. Got it. Understood. But to air it publicly to Dan Patrick, that's the opposite of good leadership. That's the opposite of good leadership. Coming up next, the Chiefs' offensive struggles. How much are on Mahomes? How much was in the game plan? How much is just Tampa was just that good? How much? We'll ask Greg Cosell upcoming next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Your most life-changing sleep is about what's underneath. Not only Casper Mattress provides the cooling, supportive comfort you need for the most refreshing feeling come morning. Only a Casper mattress. Only at Casper.com. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd. For 41 years, Greg Cosell has been at NFL Films. And, look, I'm not going to sit here and even try and compare with the amount of football knowledge that he has, but I remember the Patriots, the most dominant offense we had seen, the most dominant football team in my lifetime. I had seen 18-0, and they took on a team that they had beaten in the regular season in the New York Giants, but the Giants' pass rush just really limited Tom Brady. It was one of the great upsets in the history of the Super Bowl. And that's what I thought would happen. But I guess I just wonder, what's worse for Kansas City? Their play, their game plan, or their lack of adjustments? Greg Cosell would know. This guy knows everything because he watches the film, and the film does not lie. He joins us in The Herd on Fox Sports Radio. Greg, more disappointing to you watching Kansas City's offense struggle, the play, the game plan, or the lack of adjustments?
It was interesting because when you look at it, what the Bucs did was not necessarily so remarkable in terms of tactics. They did a little blitzing in the first half, but they predominantly played behind a four-man pass rush. And they did a couple of things behind that, Doug. They played a lot of two-man coverage, which is a very good coverage to play because you always have two deep safeties. And then they did another thing that they did out of dime with six defensive backs where they showed a three-deep safety look. And then with disguise and late movement, it essentially became kind of a cover three pattern matching coverage. Those were their two main coverages in addition to playing some others that had split safeties. So they wanted to play with split safeties, but they were able to pressure with four. Now, I will say this, though. I thought right from the start of the game that Patrick Mahomes played fast. I thought he moved unnecessarily at times, and I know that people are going to say, well, he was under pressure. Well, pressure is a relative term. There's obviously plays in which he was immediately under pressure, no question. But there were a lot of plays, when I say a lot, five or six, and that's meaningful because he missed some things. But there were a number of those in which he moved unnecessarily. He created his own pressure, and he left some plays on the field that were there. And, you know, it's funny because I remember speaking with some coaches at the Combine, and this sounds silly now because he's Patrick Mahomes, who were concerned about that with his game the year he came out of Texas Tech, that he was a little loose and undisciplined. And in this particular game, he played that way.
Yeah, I mean, that was my thought. It would look like Texas Tech Mahomes to those of us who are Big 12 fans and watch. Why didn't they give him more protection? Why not chip more? Why not, you know, why try and block four with five when your five's not working?
That I can't answer. I think that they've always lived on the fact that Mahomes is as good a second reaction improvisational quarterback as there is in the league. And maybe they felt that, hey, that seems to happen every single week with him, and normally it does. And maybe they thought that it would happen. But it didn't in this game because there's still a randomness to that kind of movement. As good as he is, as good as any quarterback is who's been able to do that, there's still a randomness, Doug, as you know, to that kind of movement. And sometimes it doesn't work. Now, clearly, there was pressure on him. The two tackles did not secure the edges very well at all, and there was pressure on him. And what started to happen is he started to anticipate and perceive pressure, and as the game progressed, he just would move. And those special throws, those special plays did not occur in this game.
Greg Cosell, our guest, 41 years of NFL Films, breaking down the Super Bowl. What about Brady? It felt like their game plan was far different from the traditional Bruce Arians-style game plan. What's the tape show?
Well, I think one of the things they did, and I think their defense allowed them to stay with it. Obviously, if the Chiefs were scoring the way they normally do, we don't know what might have happened. But they came in the game with the idea that they were going to play a lot out of base personnel. They had six offensive linemen on meaningful snaps. They played with two tight ends. At times, they played with three tight ends. And I think the goal was to keep Kansas City in their base defense, because Kansas City is a high-percentage blitz defense, but the high percentage of their blitzes come from their nickel with five defensive backs and their dime with six defensive backs, not from their base. So I think the plan was, hey, let's keep them in their base defense. They were fortunate they did not get into many third and long situations where the Chiefs really attack. In fact, the first third and long of the game, Doug, the Chiefs went with zero blitz, and they used zero blitz more than any team in the league this year. But there were not that many of those situations, and there were not that many situations where they could play dime. So I think the game played out where the Bucs could stay with base offensive personnel, and it really limited and minimized the Chiefs' pressure concepts.
It's interesting that because you mentioned that there was a time in which you remember the Chiefs called time defensively, and it was on that last drive of the first half before the touchdown.
Yep.
And Tom Brady got caught with the microphone, you know, saying no, same. He wanted the same personnel because he saw something he liked, right? Like it was really interesting on how they used their personnel groupings to attack Kansas City, knowing what Kansas City had to have out there defensively.
No question. And teams know that. And as I said, the score allowed that to happen. I mean, if the game progressed as maybe many of us thought, I certainly did, and that the Chiefs were scoring points, who knows what the Bucs would have done if they would have stayed with that or if they would have then made adjustments. But the game played out where they could stay with their base personnel. And as I said, that really limited and minimized what the Chiefs do really well on defense, which is pressure.
Did you see Mahomes after the game? He said he had to get rid of the ball quicker. He said the offensive line blocks sometimes. Sometimes they let guys through. But he also said that the wide receivers weren't always where I thought they were going to be. Was that Watkins? Like, who was he talking about that wasn't where he thought he was going to be? Where was the confusion?
That's hard to know, and that's one of those statements that, you know, I don't know how to respond to that. You know, it's the Super Bowl. They've played a lot of games. So, you know, I don't know where to go with that, Doug. I mean, you know, it'd be like, you know, you were a point guard if you're in your 50th game of the season and, you know, and you had no idea where your players were going to be, you know, the other four guys. I mean, that I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it was an interesting comment. Devin White and Levante David look great on TV. Okay, but that's just to us.
Well,
you see the all 22.
David in particular, because when they play two-man coverage, okay, they put David on Kelsey quite a bit. And David really was physical with Kelsey off the ball. Now, you can do that when you're in two-man coverage because you know you have safety help behind you on either side of the field. Two-man with two split safeties is a lot different than just playing cover one where there's one single high safety who has far more ground to cover. But when you're playing with two deep safeties in two-man coverage, meaning two deep safeties man-to-man across the board, they put David on Kelsey, and David got physical with him. And that was another key tactic to this game.
Look, again, this is more football layman stuff than the football savant that you are. Okay, but football layman says two high safeties run the football. Why didn't Kansas City commit to running the football more?
Again, you're asking me, you know, a question that's unanswerable for
but,
me.
But that's a reasonable question that football people would ask.
No,
right?
I know, like, but I, okay. You know, it's a question I can't answer. Should they have run the football more? Maybe early, you know, when the score was still close, it does make sense. When you face two high safeties, and particularly if it's man coverage, you can run the football because what you can do is you can run support defenders out of there because they have man coverage responsibilities. The Chiefs have not been a running team all season long. I think there was one game where they really ran it and ran it and ran it, and that was that Tuesday night game in Buffalo early in the season where I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire had 25, 26 carries, and they committed to the run. But this is a team clearly built on Patrick Mahomes and the pass game. So I'm sure that they felt, hey, this is what got us here. This is what we do. You couldn't make the argument that this particular game demanded that they run the ball more. But keep one thing in mind. Coaches coach against coaches. Todd Bowles has been coaching a long time. He knows what Andy Reid does and wants to do. So he probably said, you know what? This is the way we're going to play. We really don't expect them to run the ball. And the Chiefs didn't.
Did you notice drop-off in Brady? And I only ask because there were some penalties called. I want to get to the penalties in a second. But some of the deep shots, there were misses there, right? Like the underneath stuff, he's still very, very accurate on. The deep shots, not crazy accurate on. But in evaluating fairly the 43-year-old, seven-time Super Bowl winner, are you noticing a drop-off in Tom Brady's skills?
I did not notice it. In fact, I thought over the last half of the season, he threw the ball exceptionally well, Doug. Velocity, accuracy. You know, in his career in New England, he did not throw anywhere near the number of deep balls that he threw this year. Maybe in the Randy Moss years, but that goes back to what, 2007, 2008? So that was a long time ago. But he was asked to throw a lot of deep balls this year, and there was a stretch where he was not particularly consistent doing that, and then he picked it up toward the last part of the season. But when you talk about intermediate throws, throws, you know, 15 to 25 yards where you have to drive the football, those are more arm strength throws than deep throws. I thought he threw the ball with great velocity. I don't think there was any drop-off in the physical element to his game.
It's just amazing.
It's remarkable.
Right? I mean, 43 years old, you think he'd get dead arm, and you know some of these other guys we've seen fade, and yet he still has that incredible. What about the penalties? My perception is that normally Super Bowls aren't that tightly officiated, right? They'd let the guys play, but this crew, they were calling it tightly the whole game, and Kansas City never adjusted. What's your opinion, having watched the tape and watched probably every Super Bowl on tape, of the way in which it was officiated?
Well, I can only give you my personal opinion. I mean, I you know, the penalties, you can debate that forever, and smart, reasonable people will disagree. Just my personal opinion is I like to see the players play unless it's blatant. And again, that's not a knock on the officials. That's just a personal opinion. It's the same reason I don't like to watch football in a heavy rainstorm or a snowstorm, because I like to see the athletes play to the best of their physical traits and abilities. So when it comes to penalties, to me, unless it's truly blatant, I just like to see the game played. You know, I always felt that. I feel that way kind of watching all sports, you know, even basketball, you know, which obviously you played at a high level. I don't like to see a lot of fouls called unless they're really blatant fouls. You know, that's just my personal thing. Can you make the argument that they were penalties? Of course you can. But as I said, you can debate that forever.
But did it affect the outcome of the game? Would the game have changed?
I mean, sure. I mean, that drive at the end of the first half was critical. Now, you know, were they penalties? Yeah. By the letter of the law, they were penalties. So it just, you know how it works, Doug. When one team seems to get the majority of the penalties as opposed to the other team, people always think there's a problem. So, you know, that's always the way it works in sports.
Okay. Let me ask you about Russell Wilson. I know it's not Super Bowl, but Russell Wilson went on Dan Patrick yesterday. He said he wants a little bit more say in the personnel department. He also told reporters that he's tired of being hit. But my opinion, again, the layman opinion is, doesn't Russell Wilson hold on to the ball and run around back there to make plays? How much of his gripe is legitimate?
You know, I think you got to be careful when you say things like that, because people who study the tape as I do, Russell Wilson is a quarterback that creates a lot of his own sacks. He's not a true timing rhythmic player. There are times he is on certain throws, certainly on deep throws, which he throws a deep ball exceptionally well. But he's not a true timing rhythm quarterback the way you think of the Bradys, the Breezes, those kinds of quarterbacks. His game is very much built on movement. His second reaction, improvisational ability, one of the best in the league at that, has been since he came into the league. Quarterbacks that move, with very few exceptions, Mahomes may be one because he's truly special with his traits and skill set, but quarterbacks that move, Doug, always get hit more and they get sacked more. And you have to be careful about saying that publicly, because people who really study the tape and know how that works and know what is really going on. And I think I don't think he should have said that, because I think that it comes across to the people in the business in the wrong way.
Is Matt Stafford an upgrade over Jared Goff?
Yes. Matt Stafford is a high-level traits quarterback. I know there are people who think that because he hasn't won a playoff game or been in the Super Bowl, and obviously Goff has done both of those things, that believe that he may not be. But as far as skill set and traits, he is certainly an upgrade.
Okay. Carson Wentz, how far has he dropped in terms of watching the tape? How bad is it?
Yeah, he was not very good this year in many ways, and there's many reasons for that. Obviously, some are on him for sure. He's always been a quarterback that needed daily technique work. He has a fundamental issue that they really worked on very hard with when Frank Reich and John DeFilippo were there, and when they left that. Again, I'm not there every day. I can just tell you what the film shows, that some of those issues really came out, and he's got those issues, and they caused problems with his ball placement and his ball location, which became really erratic this year. And the other thing that really stood out on tape is, for whatever reason, he left a lot of throws on the field. The design of the play was there. The receiver was there, open by NFL standards, and he would not turn it loose. So, again, I can't tell you why. I can only tell you what the film shows.
Okay, what's the film show about Jared Goff? Because, you know, what I've been told by the Rams folks was he wouldn't turn it loose. And they didn't think he was lazy, but he just wasn't the hardest worker, wasn't accountable. But
yep.
What do you think when you see Goff on TV? What do you think?
That I don't know, because you know, you talk to people. I'm sure that's true, but I can tell you he's a certain kind of quarterback, and there's a belief among many, and maybe McVay now shares that belief after you know being in the league for a number of years and seeing what works. You have to leave a Tom Brady out of it. He's obviously special, but there's certainly a belief in the league that quarterbacks now need to have some kind of movement ability because defenses are too good. And Goff is very much of a mechanical programmed player. Yes, they can do designed movement with him, but there's no real second reaction ability to Goff. So can he function when everything is right? And McVay certainly puts together a great passing scheme that more often than not presents those defined reads and throws, but you can't do that 100% of the time. It's just not possible. So Goff is a certain kind of player, very programmed. And yes, you can function with him. We know that. He got to a Super Bowl. But it's hard to do that week in and week out.
Greg, great stuff, man. Another incredible year sharing your knowledge from NFL films and all that you see and all that you know. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it, how much Colin appreciates it. Thanks so much for being our guest in The Herd.
Hey, Doug, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Greg Cosell from NFL Films. 41 years of breaking down the good stuff. Let's get you to Ryan Music with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is The Herd Line News.
What do you got there, Ryan Music?
Oh, Doug, I have got so many different things that I can get with you on here. And let's talk NFL quarterbacks, huh?
Let's talk quarterbacks.
Yeah, I don't think we do enough of that around here, Doug. But
really?
We could always use more of it, that's for sure.
More is more.
So you have former NFL quarterback David Carr talking about his brother, the current NFL quarterback, Derek Carr of the Las Vegas Raiders on the NFL Network, saying that teams have called and offered trades, but they've been told no regarding Derek Carr of the Las Vegas Raiders.
It's interesting what we have to do. These guys, the egos, like this is what I've learned in this business, and it's obviously true in the NFL. No matter how successful you are, guys are insecure. And they need to be told, need to be affirmed, the love, right? Like, I think women get a bad rap because men, you know, we have to give them affirmation and confirmation of our feelings to them. Like, guys are the same way.
100%.
No matter how successful these dudes are, they're incredible. Like, the Russell Wilson thing, you know, just so you know, people called, we're not trading you. Like, they want to be told, we love you, you're our guy. And I think that's what the Derek Carr thing is. I think that's what the Rodgers thing is. I think that's what the Russell Wilson thing a little bit is too.
I mean, and that's ultimately to some degree, based off of all the reporting, what the Tom Brady thing was. I mean, it had a lot to do with the roster makeup, but also he felt like he wasn't being respected or appreciated by Bill Belichick in New England.
Yeah. Yeah. Now he's out doing his own thing, but I you know, I think that Bill is, the issue with Bill is he treats everybody the same and he tries to cut feelings out of it. And I think that's really hard when you have a guy who is all about the fields. And I think there were some hurt feelings there.
I think the difference is, I think it was, isn't Jimmy Johnson's old saying, I treat everybody the same, different.
Yeah. That's it.
Speaking of Tom Brady, though, there's one guy in the NFL who's also a future Hall of Famer who wants to be teammates with Tom Brady. That's Adrian Peterson. He told TMZ, it would definitely be something I'm interested in. If they want to make me a part of it, I'll be a part of it for sure, because I'm definitely trying to add a trophy to my resume. Don't know if that actually fits well or if that's just a, hey, Tom, please come help me out.
Well, no, I do think that there's a good chance that this is what the Buccaneers become. It's kind of a little bit of the LeBron method, right, where LeBron is able to add guys at the buyout deadline. And when you guys are bought out of the contract, because they want to compete for a championship. And I do think that's one of the ways in which Tampa feels like they could compete. You know, if they lose a Fournette or they lose some of these guys, they feel like they can get a guy or two that will sign on the cheap late.
Yeah, I guess I just don't know if Adrian Peterson is really that guy anymore, especially for the type of running back Tom Brady likes, you know, short, quick passes out of the backfield. And that's never been Adrian Peterson's game.
No. He catches with his elbows.
All right, and we'll wrap up with this, Doug. A little mix here between NBA and NFL. Steph Curry was on the Huddle and Flow podcast. He was asked about NFL players that he likes to watch. He said Patrick Mahomes for sure. And he went on to say, I see a lot of myself in him. Obviously, there's been a lot of comparisons. The creativity. You can't blink or you feel like you're going to miss something special. I just love his confidence when he knows that at any point, something special can happen.
There are a lot of similarities there. There really are, right? Like son of a pro athlete as well. There were some doubters because of the style by which they played is a little, they're not risk averse at all. Yeah, I see it. That's not terrible. Not terrible at all.
Well, I'd also say the comparison would be is you always felt like with Steph Curry and the Warriors, there was like no deficit that felt like it could be undone. Like you're always doing that math in your head. Like, okay, yep. Warriors are down by 12. That's just
yeah,
three.
And they chew it up quick too.
Yeah, right? It's like, just wow, like, oh, three three-pointers and they're right back in it. And it at least for me, I know the ratings would suggest otherwise. It felt like despite the Super Bowl constantly being a two-possession game from halftime on, you always were like, hey, you know, if they just score a touchdown here, it's still a ball game up until, you know, about partway through the third quarter, and you're like, yeah, this thing is a total wrap.
Agreed. That's Ryan Music with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
So the Buccaneers victory parade is currently going on. Tom Brady just chucked the Lombardi trophy to some teammates who are on a different boat. But what you didn't realize, though, Tom Brady wearing a knee sleeve while in shorts and a t-shirt on the boat. Right? That is some old man stuff right there. When just to go out and throw on some shorts and, hey, I'm going to throw a knee sleeve on. That is some 43-year-old, like, my knee hurts so badly, I can't stand on a boat and wave to people. Old man Brady, who looks, I mean, whatever products he's using on his face and on his hair, let's get some of that stuff to sponsor the Herd and the Doug Gottlieb Show, huh? All right, coming up next, we have the best for last. Super Bowl's over. Football season's over. That gives us our best for last. We'll get to that next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Tired of cooking at home? Change it up without getting up. Just order Jersey Mike's through their app for no contact delivery and no contact at the door. Pick up Jersey Mike's, a sub above. I am sitting here staring at a glorious, glorious sandwich from Jersey Mike's. You should too. Just download their app. Could not be any easier. Let's get to the best for last.
It's almost the end of the show, but that doesn't mean we're phoning it in. Nope, we grind to the very last segment. It's time for best for last.
All right, so look, football season is over. What do we have to do now that we don't watch football? There are some great things. Okay, so here's what we wanted to do. The 10 best things. 10 best things post-football. Number 10. On a weekend. Number 10. Spring break. I personally have never experienced spring break. I haven't. I grew up as a basketball player. Spring break in college is the NCAA tournament. I played in it. Okay. Spring break in high school was AU tournaments. It seems like a good time, and most of those states kind of opening up, and many of you have not been out on the in the road, right? So maybe you can get the vaccine, maybe you can go to somewhere nobody is, or just it's the idea of a spring break in your mind. Maybe you go skiing. Spring break.
Number 9.
Golf. Spring golf can be a little hit or miss, right? Depends on where you live. If you're here in beautiful Southern California, you're good. You know, if you're in the Midwest, you're like, really? Really? But, I mean, the first time you get out there, you're like, man, I've been practicing in the basement. Or my buddy's got one of those simulator things. The first time you get out there, the air, the trees, it's pretty good. Golf.
Number 8.
The beginning of baseball season. Baseball truly knows what the fans want, so they deaden the baseball. Yay! By the way, if you can deaden a baseball, that would mean you could liven the baseball too, huh? The beginning of baseball season. It used to bring such joy and hope, and now it just brings, all right, who are the Dodgers going to play in the World Series?
Number 7.
I'm told NHL hockey is still going on. I'll throw a hockey fan a bone. Right? Throw them a bone. Just put it out there. They call jerseys sweaters. They do hit the crap out of each other. Somehow, hockey toughness is above any other toughness. And overtime is the greatest thing ever. I don't know. Kind of a randomness to overtime sometimes. We'll go hockey.
Number 6.
The NBA playoffs. Now, it's a ways away. It's a ways away. But the NBA playoffs this year feel like it's going to be interesting. Remember, Clippers last year, combustible. But you got Clippers, you got Jazz, you got Nuggets, you got Dame Time and Dame Lillard. And, of course, you got the Lakers. They'll be the favorite. That's in the West. And the East, I mean, look, the Nets are still not great. They're like 17-14. But you do have Bucks. You do have Celtics. You do have Sixers. You do have Nets. You got at least 4 good teams. Playoffs should be enjoyable.
Number 5.
I'm going to put NFL free agency. Now, last year, we were saved during quarantine because, well, Tom Brady changed teams, and it changed the entire league. This year, we could continue to have that trend of quarterbacks changing teams. Last year was Jameis. Last year was Cam Newton. Hey, where are you guys that said the Patriots are making the playoffs because they had Cam Newton? Guess you didn't talk to anybody who saw him not be able to throw a football in Carolina anyway. We had massive movement last year. It feels like there'll be a similar amount of movement. We've already had 2 quarterbacks change places with Goff and Stafford. NFL free agency at 5.
Number 4.
The Masters. A tradition unlike any other. The Masters. Missing from the Masters. I mean, like, look, we have Tiger, but we just had the Masters like 2 weeks ago. The problem with the Masters that they're going to run into is we didn't have a lot of space and time between the Masters, and it doesn't feel like to be the buildup. Will there be the patrons there? Probably not. Will there be the Azaleas? Probably. Will Tiger be able to compete? Probably not. That's why it's only 4 on the list.
Number 3.
Oh, number 3. Number 3 is one that I am particularly fond of, right? I'm particularly fond of the NFL draft. We know Trevor Lawrence won. Where else? And last year, I felt like they killed it. I liked the draft when it was on Zooms and stuff. Like, I like that. I don't know about you guys, but I kind of dug it. I thought it was one of the cooler things about social distancing was Goodell in his basement and then ultimately looking sleepy, looking really, really very sleepy in his basement.
Number 2.
I hate to be that guy, but I'm going to tell you. Daytona 500. Yeah. Super Bowl of NASCAR. It's on Fox. That's all I got for you.
Number 1.
March Madness. NCAA tournament, which they announced today. They're The games are going to kind of stand alone. They're all going to be in Indianapolis. So you won't have... Remember when we were kids, you had to get out of school on a Thursday, and then you go to a sport. Your dad was sneaking into a sports bar so you could watch all four games on at once. Not anymore. They're almost all kind of standalone games, or one will be in the first half, one will be in the second half. You get the second weekend, they'll all be by themselves. The bad news is Duke, Kentucky, not making the tournament. UCLA is pretty good. You know, like all the Blue Bloods, Kansas is okay. All the Blue Bloods are really struggling. So unless you're a fan of Baylor and Gonzaga, maybe Michigan, be prepared to pick a team you've never heard of in your bracket. That's the best for last. Any additions, addendums you would like, boys? Greg Tuohy or Ryan?
I can't believe you haven't been on spring break. I can't believe your kids haven't killed you for that.
Never been on spring break. Work. I mean, they've done stuff. You know, they've done the Clearwater Beach and pet the whales type of thing. You know, you feed the whales. Or no, it was the dolphins, right? That's where, not Flipper. What's the one from the movie that has the bionic fin type deal? Anyway. Yeah, they've been to Clearwater. They've done some spring break stuff. I'm not a spring break guy, so I'm sure it's a good time. It feels like kind of amateur hour, like New Year's Eve kind of debauchery. Calling out tomorrow. I'll be back with you. So enjoy. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is The Herd.